This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Enjoying some music today from one of the thousands of concerts our guest has conducted over the years. Thanks again to Clovis North High School in Clovis, California, specifically Arthur Hawansky, David Lesser, and their principal, Scott Dilley, for arranging this interview in front of an audience of high school and junior high students. We've heard about how Arnold Gabriel, the son of Italian immigrants, became a machine gunner with the 29th Infantry Division, came ashore on Omaha Beach on June 6, 1944. We've heard what he survived as the division pushed across Europe, and he's been pretty candid about how difficult it all was. But his perspective grew when he got to return to Europe more than a decade after World War II as an Air Force band leader. How do you think you'd react to this order from your commanding general?
He said, "Captain, first thing I want you to do is improve relations between the United States and Germany." And I'm thinking, you know, only 13 years ago, we were shooting at each other. I got to improve relations. I said, "Yes, sir." So we did several things. And to show you how music can really heal, I did an American musical every year for those 5 years with Germans and Americans at the German-American Club. So on stage here were Germans and Americans singing and dancing. Now, in the pit, I needed an orchestra. I didn't have an orchestra. I had a band, no strings. But in those days, and I still think they still do, the Bundeswehr band from Bonn, which is their national band, would come out and play a band concert. In the second half, they all doubled on strings. They come out and play the Beethoven Fifth, same people, doubling on strings. So I went to my commanding general, who said, "Improve relations," asked him to go. I couldn't do it. Went to the Bundeswehr and asked for their string section. So I had Americans and Germans in the pit, in the orchestra, and on the stage. And we did Kiss Me, Kate, and Paint Your Wagon, and Brigadoon every year. We had a hall of about 1,000 people, 8 nights sold out every single night. What music can really do is to bring people together. It was very, very, very successful.
And how else are you ever going to hear Paint Your Wagon in a German accent? Right?
Exactly, yeah.
Here, this musical career that started in earnest, I guess, about 65 years ago, has taken you literally just about everywhere, right? What are some of the highlights as far as the parts of the world that you've experienced or the places you've been that you wouldn't have been without music?
Well, there's one story I tell kind of facetiously, but it's true, some of the highlights. One of the great highlights was conducting the Mormon Tabernacle Choir, and I don't know whether you're too young to remember Donny Osmond. He was my soloist who sang the last full measure of devotion. 340 voices and 80-piece symphony orchestra. That certainly had to be a highlight.
When you're conducting something like that, do you ever find yourself, even though you've done it thousands of times, feeling that emotion that so many of us feel when we're listening to it?
It's always with me. At the Beach of Normandy, we did Hymn to the Fallen from Saving Private Ryan. Not only was I bawling, but half the band was bawling too.
Let's talk about that, the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Tell all of us where you were, what you were doing, and who you had with you.
We were sponsored by Music Celebrations out of Phoenix, and they formed 110 players from all over the United States. I think we had about 20 from Clovis in that band.
The Clovis Community Band, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we had 110, and we had rehearsals in Paris, and on the 4th of Paris, we did a concert at City Hall in Paris, and then on D-Day, June 6th, on Omaha Beach, and played a concert there. Again, was very, very emotional. And somebody counted, we played, I think, 9 selections, and we had 8 standing ovations.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the audience like?
Well, they came from all over that Normandy area. And the little old ladies that were alive in World War II, not many men were because they were either killed or died since, come up and kiss me on both cheeks with tears in their eyes, because I'm still, to them, a liberator.
You are. And if we were all to go there right now, there are a lot of things that we could see. I mean, we could see that same beach that they came ashore. You could even see some of the military equipment that was there at the time. You could see the little church in St. Mary Glees with a paratrooper still hanging from it, just as he was that day when John Steele got hung up on the steeple. There are a lot of things that we could see that remind us of it. But we weren't there. and you were. And here on a day, the 70th anniversary, when the President of the United States and all these other world leaders are there, you're there conducting a band, not just as something that's interesting to you, but something that you lived and something that killed your friends. What did that feel like to be in that spot at that moment doing what you were doing?
Well, the President of France was also there, along with the President Obama. And on YouTube, you can see the President giving the speech at the military cemetery where 9,600 people who died at Normandy are buried. And I'm sitting directly behind the President. When he finishes his speech, he turned around and shook hands with, there were only about, I think, 20 or 30 veterans of D-Day who were there. And both presidents shook hands with me, and that's on YouTube. That, again, very, very moving.
I know you don't stare when you look back. You made that clear to us, and I'm going to remember that. That's a powerful statement. But do you ever look back and say, why me? How did this all work out the way it did for me? Why am I the one that survived all of this, that has had all these opportunities, and here I am all these years later still going and having the privilege of honoring all those guys who aren't still here?
Well, yeah, there's almost a feeling of guilt. But on the other hand, I feel like I have to continue to give, that my life was spared, and as long as I can continue to give, I'm going to. And I have 3 contracts to conduct when I'm 100 years old, and I'm going to do it, by the way.
You have 3 contracts?
Yes, I do.
You've committed to it?
Yes.
You can't back out?
Nope.
I don't want to put any words in your mouth. I'm just always interested to understand how you understand it and how you grasp it. And I think it's kind of funny that here you told us you're a Catholic, but your first music job was in a Baptist church. You've conducted the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. You've done these things. Just music has bridged every possible divide.
And then I worked with the Tokyo Kasai, and Kasai is Buddhist. So all of our rehearsals were in a Buddhist temple, so you take your shoes off.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of stories there, but I'll move on. And when I was in Europe, I worked in Tehran, which was the center of Islam in those days.
Yeah.
And as you know, on my website, there's a picture of me and Pope John II, who's Catholic. So the Buddhists, the Mormons, the Islam, and Catholics. So when I go to heaven, I've touched all bases.
Well, maybe that answers my question, which was just...
Those are 4 of the highlights, by the way, yeah.
Yeah, and it's incredible. Very few people could have pulled that off. So I guess that's my question. What is your explanation for that? Do you believe that someone was pulling those strings for you? Do you think that's just the way it happened? You're the one who lived it, so what's your perspective?
Well, there's another old expression, there are no atheists in a foxhole.
Yeah, and you spent a lot of time in a foxhole.
Yeah, so you become a believer. February 1945, we crossed the Ruhr River, not the R-U-H-R, R-O-U-M-L-O-T-E-R River. And that was the most important river in Germany because the Rhine River, the Germans had left the Remagen Bridge open. They had planted bombs in it, but they never set them off. So the Americans we drove trucks and tanks across the Rhine River without a problem. But the Ruhr River was something else. We crossed the Ruhr River in February, and fought for 7 days to take the little town of Jülich across the river. And our commanding general said, you know, there's a city of Mönchengladbach, 250,000 people. If we take that, which is the largest city we will have taken in Germany to date, we'll make headlines. So we marched, after fighting for 7 days, marched all night long, 20 kilometers, attacked Mönchengladbach the next morning. About 10 days later, finally took Mönchengladbach. Now that's tired. Never having been to bed.
Wow.
So move the clock forward. Now I'm command band director in Wiesbaden, Germany. We were asked to play a marching festival in Mönchengladbach. I said, I remember that city. So again, 5 bands, one from Egypt that played the triumphal march from Aida with costumes like from the opera with a herald trumpet. Really, really terrific. And they had a band from Denmark and one from Norway and so forth. And we were last, and we did our typical American show with all of the American patriotic music. Glenn Miller, they love Glenn Miller. And after the show was over, the Burgomeister, the mayor of Mönchengladbach, invited all of the bands to the Ratskeller, the city hall. And here was about 300 musicians sitting for dinner. And I was sitting with my band, and the mayor of Mönchengladbach comes up, kind of looking kind of sheepishly, and he approached me and he said, Captain, you know, this festival was not a contest, but we all felt that the American band was the best, and we want to present you with a city flag, I'm much glad back. Think about the irony of that story. So I got back to Wiesbaden, Germany, and the Stars and Stripes is the official newspaper for overseas troops. And the headline of the Stars and Stripes says, Gabriel captures Mönchengladbach in war and with music. What a great headline.
And probably both equally as satisfying.
Especially with music.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm looking at some of the other questions that these young people have come up with, and I bet you've got a dozen answers for this one, too. Somebody wanted to know, who were your favorite guest soloists with the Air Force Band, and why?
Well, if you don't know Dan Asmo, you probably wouldn't know the others. Maybe you do. If you watch the late movies, you probably watched Edward G. Robinson, Shirley Temple. Anybody know Shirley Temple? She was a very dear friend. She appeared with me several times. There was a television show, I'm sure Paul remembers, the Mike Douglas Show from Philadelphia, and he always had a co-host. And when Shirley Temple was the co-host, she always had the Air Force Band come along to appear, and she did a narration with us. We won the Freedom's Foundation Medal for the most patriotic show of the year. So we were asked to repeat it in front of Independence Hall in Philadelphia the following year. And I have a videotape of that, a CD of it. It's terrific.
I've got to check that out.
But she's one of my favorites. And Doc Severinsen, nobody remembers him probably either.
From The Tonight Show?
He had The Tonight Show before. Well, I don't know who has it now.
There was another name that I saw had some really good things to say about you, a legendary musician, Dave Brubeck. I actually interviewed a veteran who served with Dave Brubeck during the war. What was your interaction with him?
Well, again, we did several shows together. And he brought his sons. It was Dave Brubeck and his three boys. And when we did our Constitution Hall series, we had 4,000 people. We had to rehearse them from 1 to 2, opened their doors at 2, concert at 3, that fast. But before the guest came, I always wanted to know what they were going to do. And if I had a recording, I wanted that recording so I knew the tempos, so the rehearsals would go very, very well. I always wanted to be prepared. So he sent me tapes of what he was going to do, and we did the rehearsal. I said, anything more? He said, why don't we do an encore? I said, Dave, we don't have an encore. He said, I'll write one. So between 2 and 3, by the time that he had written a lead sheet, gave it to my arranger, and my arranger's backstage arranging your full concert band. And during the concert, the parts are going under the stand. And so it was take 5, by the way, so everybody knew it pretty well. If you go to my website, which is very easy, colgabriel.com, there's a section that's called Critical Acclaim that my public relations guy put together with quotes from some of these guest artists that were with me. And his quote is priceless. It said, your rehearsal was like a concert, and your concert was a celebration. One of the best quotes I've ever had.
Hard to beat that. You've conducted in all 50 states, 50-plus countries around the world. Is there something that in almost 90 years you haven't done yet that you're still hoping to do someday?
Not really. Just keep on moving.
He's doing a pretty good job of that, isn't he? Yeah. We've got a couple minutes left here. Before I forget, I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country in war and through music for all these years, because the impact that you've had in music is incredibly significant for so many people. So thank you for all of that, and thank you for taking the time to tell us some of this today. You mentioned the book that your son is working on.
Mm-hmm.
Any clue when that's going to be available?
He thinks he can finish it this year.
If that book turns into a movie, who do you think should play Colonel Gabriel?
Me. You see, that's optimism.
Is that one of those 3 contracts you have for when you're 100? What about the 19-year-old PFC Gabriel at Omaha Beach? Who would play him?
Probably one of my grandchildren.
Perfect. I like your answers. With all the looking back we've done, he's given us something to look forward to as well, hasn't he? Our radio time is running out for today. You'll find a little more of the interview and a little more music in the podcast version at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks again to Clovis North High School for the venue, the audience, and most importantly, the chance to record this interview to share with you. One thing Arnold Gabriel learned as a teenager in combat, and through his actions and all the decades since, has helped countless others come to understand: America is worth celebrating, and freedom is not free.